You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to help you plan that unbelievable travel experience. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Welcome back to the 750. I am your ORG Ochoa. He is your 75, the one, the only, Mr. Two-time Super Bowl champion, College Football Hall of Famer, Mr. Tony Casillas. Tony, Merry early Christmas to you, my friend.
Hey, you too, buddy. I appreciate you being patient with me. As you know, I'm traveled to Florida, got here late last night. We're doing this podcast today, obviously, this morning, but in Florida, actually, not too far away from Tampa Bay. Flew into Tampa Bay. It's so ironic. We're in Clearwater, which is about 25 minutes west of Tampa Bay. So how ironic. I'm here with Tampa Bay. And fortunately, the Buccaneers aren't – it's not a home game for me. I'd be watching the Cowboys play. But nevertheless, before we came on air, just hoping the Cowboys clinch the NFC East this week.
Yeah, no, definitely. And we'll get into that game. But I'm curious because I saw you posting photos and, you know, kind of keeping the world updated on your traveling. So you flew out late Thursday night. My first question is, what is the airport like the Thursday before the weekend before Christmas? Because it's got to be terrible.
Well, you know what? You kind of get intimidated because you see all the statistics. Historically, it's probably one of the busier time to travel.
Right, yeah.
I believe it's 6.7 million people go through the airport.
Goodness.
Since it's ironic you brought that up. Last night when we flew in, which is Thursday night, we were on a roller coaster. I mean, real. I kid you not. We get right. You know how you get ready to. The flight starts descending. We started descending, and it felt like I was on the Texas Titan because. The plane was like wavering and kind of rolling a little bit. And, you know, I get a lot of anxiety about flying anyway. And we dropped about, I don't know, seemed like 10,000 feet. One thing about that, when you get turbulence like that, it seems like it's eternity.
Right.
But it probably lasted 15 seconds, but it seemed like it was 5 minutes. But, you know, back to your point, it wasn't that bad. I mean, going through the lines wasn't that bad. I think that you obviously got to give yourself some more time. But, you know, it wasn't as bad as I thought it'd be. Now today, if you're traveling on a Friday, on a weekend, it'll be a lot worse. So, I guess the best advice I can give everyone is to be patient.
Yeah.
And hopefully, you get to your destination. But, it's one of those holidays. You know, we planned this trip. My wife has family here, so we're looking forward to hopefully get some sun, a little beach, and enjoying our stay and spending more family here.
Interesting. Well, yeah, I mean, a lot of people will certainly be traveling this weekend. A lot of people listening to the 750 while they do so. So if you are traveling as you're listening to us, we wish you safe travels and much patience because it's certainly necessary this time of year. So you're in a place called Kokomo was what I heard, where you're at this time of year.
Oh, actually, it's Kokomo. I like that. It's Clearwater, which, it could be compared to that. You know, Kokomo, the white sand, whatever it is. I mean, you know, we're just, it's the first time we've got a chance to do this. And we brought all our bats, our really ugly, ugly sweaters.
Good.
And I don't know if you participate in that, but I tell you what, there is some obnoxious, ugly Christmas sweaters out there. So we're just hoping we bring the family tradition and just all the fun here because, it doesn't get too worse. It doesn't get that bad when you actually can wear flip-flops and walk on the beach.
Totally, totally. I saw you had an ugly sweater on social media at some point earlier this week. So I hope you're ready indeed to if you're gonna do this, you gotta do it right. You know what I mean? If you're gonna wear an ugly sweater, this thing better be hideous. You know what I mean?
Well, the one I got, I think the one that you saw said "Let's Go Nuts" and it had a toy soldier, nutcracker, whatever. But the other one I got, it actually is a llama. It has the body of the llama and actually I think it's a sweater wrapped around its neck. But, boy, I tell you what, that's one thing that's great about, you know, the holidays is that you can go out and find those hideous, hideous sweaters. The only time of the year when they're in demand.
Sure. Well, so you are in, again, I'm just going to call it Kokomo. There's a place we want to go down in Kokomo. That's where you are. And the Buccaneers will be leaving there on Saturday to head to AT&T Stadium to take on the Cowboys. Last time the Bucs visited AT&T Stadium was pretty cool. Back in 2016, a game that got flexed to Sunday Night Football because back then Tampa Bay had some significance. They don't really right now with a 5-9 record. But that was the game that Zeke Elliott jumped into the kettle for the first time. So we're kind of, you know, we're kind of bringing some good vibes out here. You know what I mean? Talking about.
Well, I know you're the messenger of irony. So maybe it's irony to be able to hopefully jump across the end zone line because yeah, it's a game that hopefully we see the Cowboys clinch. And, you know, and incidentally, you look at Tampa Bay. They have struggled this year. They're 1-6 on the road. So I think it really sets up for an opportunity for the Cowboys to clinch. And you know, not to say there's not going to be any challenges. We get into and kind of divulge in this game. There are some, I guess, some storylines. But I think the biggest storyline is, and I wrote it in the blog, is that, you know, when you get down to this point, you just got to finish, man. You just sure. you got the carrot dangling there. You got your home field crowd. So hopefully we will see a lot of Zeke Elliott jumping across that. Look, for some reason, it seems at times the kryptonite for them because they can't have a hard time in the red zone.
No, absolutely. You mentioned it. The Bucs struggling, a 5-9 record. You look at it; they've got weird wins this. Yeah. I mean, this season they beat the Saints. They beat the Eagles. You know, granted, the Eagles aren't necessarily anything special, but that was back in Week 2. They beat the Browns, who are kind of a, I don't want to say sexy team, but, you know, better looking team than usual. They beat the Panthers. I know the Panthers are certainly struggling down near the end of this season. But they've lost 6 of their last 8. They don't particularly inspire, I think, much confidence or instill much fear in people. But you're right. So I don't think this game really is about, you know, what the Bucs can or can't bring. Obviously, they've got some playmakers that you got to be aware of. You know, Gerald McCoy, I think, sticks out. But it comes down to the Cowboys' inefficiencies in the red zone. And I think this is amazing. You know, you look at it, and the Cowboys in the red zone have struggled so badly. A friend of mine, Bobby Belt, had a tweet earlier this week where he talked about the red zone woes that the Cowboys have had specifically. And he mentioned that, you know, they have, I believe, 4 rushing yards on 16 carries in their last 3 games in the red zone, something like that. And, I mean, the point being that they are just terrible. I mean, they're god-awful in the red zone. And how can that be possible, you know, that they could be that bad running the ball in the red zone? I know you've said that the field shrinks down there, but when they have the league's leading rusher, you know, I mean, it's like you said, like they have the ugliest Christmas sweater in the closet. And when they're going to an ugly Christmas sweater party, they just wear their best looking suit.
And they actually won that contest for having the ugliest sweater. But the one thing that both these teams have in common is they're both not good in the red zone. The Cowboys are 31st and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers are 32nd. So either team scores once they get down the red zone. You know, and here's a, you know, it's a great example. And you mentioned Gerald McCoy, Jason Pierre-Paul. They have, you know, some guys that are pretty active on the defensive line. So just possess, you know, just present themselves some good matchups. But, you know, it's a game that this part of the season where you got an opportunity to punch your ticket and get the play in the postseason play, it's all about a state of mind. And I think for them, it's got to be a state of mind in the red zone, especially you have a team like Tampa Bay that struggles worse than the Cowboys to be able to score in the red zone. It just presents itself with a lot of opportunities. And I think that's what they have to really sense. And sometimes RJ just comes down to this this urgency to really just you know, be able to develop an attitude to get down in the red zone and develop opportunities for your offense. And the Cowboys haven't done that this year.
What do you think about how this I mean, how does it feel in a locker room, I guess, is the overall question. I mean, because, you know, and the Cowboys have kind of dealt with that this season early on. After they beat the Jaguars, Tyrone Crawford very infamously said, "Stop talking, you know what, about our offense." I mean, they hear the noise. And so they're hearing all week that they suck in the red zone. They're terrible. They can't score. They got shut out in Indianapolis. They're embarrassing, blah, blah. I mean, so at what point does it, you know, does it become this sort of, man, we gotta do this. I mean, we just gotta get this monkey off our back kind of thing. I mean, do you think that's going on, or, in a good way maybe, but I mean, I have to believe that they are certainly aware of how bad they are when they get to the most important part of the field.
I think it's very hard. People think that, and I know as a player, you say, well, we're immune to that. We don't hear it. Well, you do hear it. And it's a statistic that every week in and week out, you got to be good in the red zone. So you start feeling that, and it just kind of starts to seep in a little bit. And I think it's, you know, as a defense, it's just as worse. I mean, it's more worse than, because you know that once they get into the red zone, they, you know, they brought the ball all the way down the field, and then it's like, okay, well, it's almost like the wave, we're holding the wave flag, white flag up. And I think offensively, again, I think it just comes down to the state of mind that, look, we need to execute. We need to be more concise. The quarterback's got to be really efficient. I think that's really good. When you think about throwing the football in the red zone, I think we talk about, we reference all the time the tight windows for the quarterback. If those windows are even tighter, that's when you really have to be really concise and efficient. And I think when you get it down, like last week, it's a great example against the Colts. We talked about it this week on our podcast, that when they're blowing, the defensive line is blowing you up when you have fourth and one and they're making negative yards, that becomes a state of mind. And I know we've got to go back and look at the matchups. You know, they're missing players on the, you know, Zach Martin's going to be out again this week. So, but that's what defenses, that's what they thrive on. They try to find a matchup. And for some reason, either it's execution or they're stolen the football, you have to be a lot more efficient, and you definitely got to be more concise.
Well, we'll see, you know, what the deal is with Zach Martin. And Xavier Suafilo's dealing with that eye, you know, swelling. That was really weird. Obviously, no Travis Frederick, and Tyron's not playing well, I mean, for his standards. I mean, the whole kit and caboodle.
Made another Pro Bowl. Oh, by the way, you got five players that made the Pro Bowl this year. Byron Jones, and we're talking about Tampa Bay. They got snubbed. Had no players picked to this year's Pro Bowl.
Do you think Tyron, in his all honesty, I mean, does that happen where dudes, will a guy be like, yeah, I made the Pro Bowl, but I kind of sucked this year? I mean, will guys own up to that, or, you know?
It's a popularity, and nothing against Tyron Smith. Once you get the name and recognition. And I remember going through the whole process, and it's probably changed because now I think they get the fans are involved in the voting. But I always thought it was a big honor to be picked by your peers. But just the whole process, there's two or three years that I made it as an alternate, and I had, maybe one year I had 150, granted I played for the Atlanta Falcons, were horrible. So it becomes kind of a popularity contest. Yeah. Once you get on the ballot and you make it, people know you. And so I don't know what the process now. Maybe they vote online, the players, or whatever on their, you know, whatever device they, you know, how they vote on making the Pro Bowl. But I always thought it was kind of a joke, and really for me, because guys, okay, well, I know that guy. You know, I may have even played against him.
Yeah.
So they vote him in, and whether Tyrone he deserved to go in this year. I mean, if you ask me and you ask him, I mean, I'm not going to argue with it. I mean, they select, but. It's the whole process of how they do it, and I hate to say it. Again, once you get in, people remember you, and especially if you made it as many times as Tyrone, they suspect. Like, even if they don't know if they played, it's like, okay, it's all about recognition. It's a name.
Yeah, I do think that the Pro Bowl used to hold a lot more weight in terms of your resume. You know, when you used to hear somebody, you know, back in the day, even like 10 years ago, a guy was an 8-time Pro Bowler. That meant a lot more. Now, I mean, you mentioned alternate. I mean, back then it wasn't as bad. Now you get to a point where, like, you know, half the roster drops out. You know what I mean?
In today's Pro Bowl, I would have definitely probably played in 4 or 5 Pro Bowls because no one wanted to go. And I understand that because of the game, the physicality of it. And we've seen the Pro Bowl. It shouldn't be, you know, it should be like an NBA All-Star. I mean, no one wants to get that time of the year. But it is a huge honor. I mean, it really is.
Sure. And I bet it's, I mean, you know, there's worse things in life than a week-long trip to Hawaii. You know what I mean? If we're being honest.
Well, I know it's not they change it. They move it back to Orlando. They haven't gone back to Hawaii. They've changed it up and down, and so they actually play the game a week before the Super Bowl, which to me is just kind of weird because no one's going to be there because all the guys that played on the Super Bowl teams are in the Super Bowl. You know, they're gonna, oh, you know, by the way, I gotta pull my hamstring. And think about the guys that haven't even been playing. You know, they've been out. They're not in postseason play. I mean, what do you want to? And look, it's an honor, but you're sitting around, you're eating, you're on vacation, you're playing golf, whatever you decide to do, and all of a sudden you got to go play in a physical football game. I just thought they should be recognized, but you know, just make it a 7-on-7 game because that's basically what it is without pads.
No, I agree. I would love that. I mean, but on the subject of the timing of it. I enjoyed it the week after. I remember reading an article that quoted Peyton Manning a long time ago, and he talked about how you knew the guys that got there late, you know, when the Pro Bowl was, when it used to be, it was, oh, well, they're here late because they won the Super Bowl. You know, like, that's really cool. I mean, if you win the Super Bowl, you should get all of those, you know, amenities and, you know, pomp and circumstance. I mean,
it's a reward. I think it is. It's it should be a glamorous award. And, you know, I always, you know, when I got snubbed, I always felt like I was missing out on something and I was something. And I always felt, I guess, envious and a little jealous I wasn't there. But it also to this, I think the biggest point, the Pro Bowl is it's all about resume.
Sure.
Building your resume for the future. Obviously, Pro Football Hall of Fame consideration. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of things and it's all about building your legacy.
Well, hopefully the Cowboys, the five of them that were voted and they're sure to be alternates, Leighton Vandrish likely gets in as an alternate. Hopefully they are not able to play because hopefully they're getting ready to head.
Yeah, they'll start adding more people. There'll be a lot of guys who, and also the last thing, you know, my last point on this is it's all about incentives too. I mean, in that contract, I mean, you may make an incentive. You may be an incentive clause for, I don't know, half. $500,000, get $250,000,
give you a little chunk. $500,000.
Yeah, absolutely, man.
I'll go buy a lot of
ugly, ugly Christmas sweaters.
Yeah, I'll go to the Pro Bowl to get $500,000. I'll do that. I'll fall on that sword.
absolutely.
But okay, so to kind of that was you know good point. Certainly, I don't think anyone really you know whatever Tyron the whole situation. But back to the red zone inefficiencies for the Cowboys. Todd Archer from ESPN had a tweet on Friday morning. And this has been a subject discussed all week long, but he talked about how the Cowboys are going to work because at the time you and I are talking, they have not practiced yet on Friday. Mm-hmm. So when they do practice on Friday, they will work on their red zone and short yardage plan. Scott Linehan said there could be more reps than normal to help fix the inside the 20 woes. And so a lot of people, Tony, had this show up on their radar because Jason Garrett talked about early on in the week, he was asked, have you worked on red zone, et cetera? He said, well, no, we worked on first and second down today, and we'll work on red zone stuff on Friday. A, how normal is this? B, if it's not normal, is it concerning? Because to me, you know, to the person who's never played in the NFL, it sounds like, okay, well, you're struggling in the red zone. I would imagine that you would want to practice that before Friday, or at least have more than one day's worth of practice for it.
I really don't even know why he would make that comment because I think this team has really kind of suffered in that category all year long. So just to now to come out and I guess when you have missing players, I mean, it breaks the continuity of the offensive line. But, you know, the execution of it, you know, on Friday, it's all about you work on the 2-minute drill. Executing plays. And it's not anything physical. And at this point in the season, you're not hitting each other. And certainly the way the collective bargaining agreement is now, it's not part of the physicality, but it's the execution of it. But, I mean, they've had this problem all year long. And
right.
I don't think it's not something that you – and I think people, it's a little misleading. They think, oh, you only got 20 yards to score. Well, as we mentioned all the time on the 7-5-0, that everything shrinks. It's got to be more refined. And it's executing. And I think for me, as a defensive lineman, think about this, RJ. It's easier to create havoc because the space, I mean, from sideline to sideline, you're not, you know, that's more for the linebackers. But think about this. You're getting upfield, and the element of time is also important, because the quarterback's not going to have all day to sit back there and throw the football, because the ball, excuse me, the field it's not as, you know, it's not as expanded. So there's a lot of things that go on that. But for Scott Linehan to make a comment like that, like, hey, coach, I mean, you've been watching film the whole year. Shouldn't you have been working? This should be part of your package and your preparation every week to be efficient on the red zone, especially if you've left so many points on the table this year for this team.
Well, how normal is that then? I mean, I know things have changed a little bit, but when you guys would have a standard practice, was it broken down that simplistically? Was it, okay, on this day we're going to work on first downs, on this day we're going to work on red zone? I mean, or was it different? I mean, is that normal, or is it?
We really, you know, the Friday preparation is more scripted. I mean, it's not a walkthrough, but, you know, in my era, where Wednesday and Thursday you actually had practice and pads, you know, Friday's a light day. It's all about mental preparation. So you go through your individual, you go through, you know, it's all more, let's say you have 30 scripted plays. Mm-hmm. So you go through situational play, then you have the red zone plays. And then at the back end of practice, you go through, it's all 2 minute. You have a 2 minute drill where you hear maybe Troy let out a couple of F-bombs because someone does execute. You know, just different. It's more the mental preparation. And I think maybe that's the problem with the Cowboys, is they need to focus more down in that area.
Right.
If you're on the road, it's more difficult because of noise and just the energy. But it's got to be the focus of being able to the detail of it. And maybe when he says that, we need to focus more on the mental aspect of it, because that's what you're doing during the week. You're putting plays in and you're going through the red zone against their looks and the scout team of this week, Tampa Bay. But it's all about the mental preparation of it. And maybe they focus more on what they need to do in that part of the field. That's what I think he's really, really referring to.
I know that we joked about 7-on-7 when it came to the Pro Bowl, and you mentioned that Fridays are kind of a lighter day. You know, mm-hmm. I don't know, maybe they do, maybe they don't wear their
pads. It's really, you have to be mentally sharp. I mean, it's one of those things. It's all the week preparation, but yeah, that's what it's for.
But so if it is a lighter day from a physical note, you know, if there's less physicality on Fridays, I feel like situations like that inherently lend an advantage to the offense, because, you know, if you're not, you know, being physical, you know, maybe if you're Byron Jones, you're letting up at some point because you don't want to hurt Amari Cooper because it's Friday, whatever the case may be. So do you think that it's possible? And I mean, I'm just, you know, I'm just racking my brain. Is it possible that, you know, maybe that gives them sort of a false sense of confidence because they do work on their red zone offense on Fridays?
Well, RJ, you know, during when you're, you know, offense gives them a look, you know, for the Tampa Bay, their opponent this week, the scout team, they give them a look, and vice versa, offense and defense. So it's nothing. You're not out there. You're just giving them, trying to give them a you know, the realistic look you can get. You don't want to make it a brother-in-law practice, but you just want to be able to give them a proper, realistic look of preparation that week. And, you know, I don't think it has anything to do with that. The hardest thing, I think, is the longer you go in the season, everyone's tired, everyone's beat up, and I think the mental fatigue starts to set in. So that's what, again, that's what these whole, as you move through the week of practice, I mean, you implement your game plan on Wednesday, Thursday, you go through it, and then Friday, let's refine everything. Let's make sure mentally we know everything. And if you're making mistakes on Friday, then you got some big problems. You got some guys out there that aren't really focused and are not preparing. So maybe that's what's happening behind the curtain that maybe we don't see. Maybe guys aren't, you know, checking assignments, sure, and the looks of, or the red zone, whatever that may be. But there's nothing physical about it, this part of practice or this part of the week of practice. It's all mental.
Did you call it a brother-in-law practice?
Is that what? Oh, yeah, said? Brother-in-law.
Could you, I, again, There's only one Super Bowl champion on this show, and it's not me. So what is – I mean, I know you're around family, so I don't know if you're at liberty to say, but well, what is a brother-in-law practice?
I try to be that brother-in-law that hopefully your wife's family likes, or, you know, vice versa, because you want to be invited back, and you just don't want to be that dude, you know. Oh, by the way, I do love my in-laws. They're good people, so –
So,
I got full, really. So the brother-in-law whole deal, so it's a terminology, and I use a perfect example, because I, you know, now it's this part of the season and during the week, it's like, you know, look, we're just going to try to get, we want to make each other look good. We want to give each other a good look, but look, we're playing a game on Sunday. The game is not played on Wednesday, Thursday, right, and Friday, right? Mm-hmm. So the old brother-in-law, so let's use Kevin Gogan, Big Nasty, for example.
Oh, or Skull of Nate Newton. I'm so excited. And okay.
So you get down in your stance, and, okay, they're going to run a toss sweep to your left. And so he's kind of like pointing. He's like giving his eyes, you know, kind of going towards your left. So you know he's blocking that ways. And then he may, you know, he may give you like the, you know, one or two. One's for a run and two's for pass. So then you just kind of, okay, well, and then you just kind of brother-in-law. Then it becomes more of an Academy Award performance.
Okay, all right.
So, like, we call that brother-in-law. Let's not make each other look bad. We're just trying to give each other a look. And it's probably more for the veterans.
Sure.
You'll get some rookie out there that's maybe on the practice squad. He's out there going full board. I'm like, dude, man, I got to play on Sunday.
Yeah.
So you don't, maybe not brother-in-law that, because they don't really understand, because they're still trying to
make their name. Yeah, sure.
Exactly.
Wow.
So that's kind of the brother-in-law terminology.
I never knew that you
tweet that out. I think that'd be a great tweet, the brother-in-law terminology.
I never knew that you were in-laws with Kevin Gogan or Nate Newton. Maybe Step. I mean, I don't know. I mean, you got a lot of brother-in-laws, so that's pretty.
Well, the
cool
worst thing about it, you know, Stepnowski was he was, you know, to me, he was like the UTR, under the radar of greatness. But, you know, if you go just a little too fat, a little too hard, everybody get a little cantankerous. So we want to take care of each other, especially 14 weeks in the season or even 10 weeks in the season. You're like, dude, just give me a look. We'll make it look good. Let's not try to make each other look bad. We don't want to get chewed out by Jimmy or the coaches in the film. We just make this. We want to make this. We want to execute the brother-in-law.
To me, that sounds like you know, if somebody did go a little bit hard one day, you know, maybe Kevin Gogan grab. Hey, dude, Tony, come on.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
What are you doing out here? What are you doing going so hard? It's a brother-in-law practice. Come on, man, get it together.
If it's a rookie. Yeah, if it was a rookie or some younger player, I'm like, come on, man. And you're on the team. You're not going to – back then it was we practicing all about Valley Ranch. I guess it'd be all the star team.
Right.
You don't want to be all Valley Ranch during the week.
Well, those are cousins, because, you know, we're talking brother-in-law. Those are the cousins trying to make their name in the family. We don't need that nonsense right now. Okay, so we all learned something very valuable. That was really cool about the brother-in-law practice. So – obviously, this game is scary, I think, for Cowboys fans. In fact, according to SB Nation's Fan Pulse tool, Cowboys fans' confidence dropped significantly following the loss in Indianapolis. I know we talked about it. I'm almost willing to throw it away as a wash. You know, there's a lot of weird circumstances surrounding it. But I will say what does scare me, not scare me, but, you know, gets me up out of bed, so to speak, is DeSean Jackson, who's missed the last couple games for the Bucs, is expected to return. He might not, but he's expected to return on Sunday. That is a dude who, no matter how relaxed you get, you don't get relaxed when it comes to DeSean Jackson. That's a guy that can kill you. Mike Evans certainly is one of the more spectacular receivers in the NFL. I know Jameis Winston has had his struggles this season, but I'm a little nervous. I mean, because you could see this, you know, slipping one way, and then I think DeSean Jackson is the snowball, so to speak. He could snowball, and that could grow and grow and grow and roll into something really bad if you let it. You know what I mean?
Well, I think it may the statistics may get a little skewed, because you remember the Magic Fitzpatrick. That was a whole,
of course, the greatest game of all.
Oh yeah, the beard, the Conor McGregor beard, and just had a lot of swag going on at the time, and then the whole, you know, the you know, Jameis Winston being suspended for that Uber incident out in Las Vegas. So there's been a lot of drama. But as you just mentioned, Mike Evans, I think he had a legitimate shot of making a Pro Bowl. 74 receptions, 1,328 yards and 5 touchdowns. And DeSean Jackson, I mean, I know back in the day when he played for, you know, the Eagles, and then went on to play for the Redskins, he could be, because the guy was kind of a knucklehead. I remember him celebrating the first time he ever played. I think my mind's trying to think what college he came out of, but he liked to celebrate before he actually scored. So it actually happened against the Cowboys.
Yeah, well,
the Cowboys.
He came out of Cal. And,
exactly.
And it happened at Cal. And right. To your point, I was going to bring this up later, and I will again, but as we're talking on Friday, yesterday, Thursday, was the 10-year anniversary of the final game ever played at Texas Stadium when the Cowboys lost to the Ravens. And so we had tweeted a bunch of stuff from, you know, BTB and stuff, and asked people what their greatest memory was at Texas Stadium. And a lot of people said that final Monday night game there, which was in 2008 against the Eagles, that was the game that DeSean Jackson pulled the celebration in where he dropped the ball right before the goal line. That was a great game and a great moment. Yeah, he had a really bad habit going on there for a while.
And I hijacked that picture, by the way. I think posted something on Instagram about that. And I think the caption was, it's been a long time since the Cowboys have played in this building, but the memories of championships will forever be remembered. Mm-hmm. And but yeah, this, back to DeSean Jackson. And then Mike Evans. I mean, the guy's a tremendous player. So, and you look at the yards that they put up. I mean, they're in the top five in the National Football League. And maybe that's a little skewed because of what Ryan Fitzpatrick did early on.
Yeah.
But there's a capability for them. Now, last week, they kind of hit the juggernaut. I mean, when they play, you know, the only way to score, I mean, it's 20-12. And Jameis Winston had, what, 157 yards passing, and that was against the number one defense in the National Football League with the Ravens, and then now they face the Cowboys. So, I mean, there's some capability there, but again, it's going to be all about, and I think it matches up very well for the Cowboys because of the secondary, but they definitely have some viable playmakers on the offensive side of the ball that you don't want to let them get going.
Who is your snowball then? Your player that could roll into a big avalanche? Because I said mine was DeSean Jackson. Who is
Mike Evans. I think without a doubt he's a big receiver. He gives them a lot of opportunity. Now, Jameis Winston, if he has the time to throw the football, obviously he can be efficient. I always thought Fitzpatrick was a lot more accurate. Mm-hmm. And, you know, their coach, they're trying to make a case to bring him back. So there's a lot of things going on with that team. But I got to go with Mike Evans. You know, I watch that kid play. He's a long receiver. He's athletic. He can go up for the high point ball. And so if I had one guy that I really thought that the Cowboys got to focus on and not let get going, it's got to be Mike Evans.
I'd almost rather let Cheeto try to handle Mike Evans. Because my concern would be if Byron Jones, you know, sort of puts his hands on Mike Evans for the whole day, that could lead to a situation where, you know, Byron's doing his thing and locking down Mike Evans. Byron is a Pro Bowler after all. But I think my number one concern would be if somehow, some way, the Cowboys left Chidobe Awuzie on DeSean Jackson. Because I think I agree with you that Mike Evans is certainly individually a greater threat, but I think that Mike Evans on Byron Jones gets neutralized. But if DeSean Jackson is on Cheeto, that could end badly. I think the only guy that can run with DeSean is Byron Jones. That's my point. So I'd almost rather risk letting Cheeto handle Mike Evans. I agree with you. That's going to be very, very difficult.
Yeah, I think that's when you look at this the matchups, and DeSean, he's still got speed. Now he's been banged up, and I don't know what his whole health issue is going to be this week, but. I mean, for me, that's he's very good at getting downfield and separation, and he can do a lot for kind of neutralize the defense. But I mean, I think for the matchups across the board, for the Cowboys is always going to be, look, going in this game, you just got shut out on the road. You got a team that's coming in here; they're 1-6 on the road this year, and you know that they're going to try to get the ball to their big playmakers, Mike Evans, DeSean Jackson. And so what do you need to do? You need to dial up the pass rush like they have done all year long. And I think Jameis Winston, yeah, he's good out of the pocket. But I think if you get him in the pocket, I think you have a lot of opportunities to, you know, he's going to make some mistakes. He's going to throw a couple interceptions, and this kind of sets up for that.
Well, Byron Jones's first career interception actually came off of Jameis Winston.
Yeah.
And I believe that every time that Jeff Heath has played against Jameis Winston, he has walked away with an interception. Speaking of things to tweet, I'm about to tweet that as soon as we get out of here. but so last couple things here. I know you wrote about it too for bloggingtheboys.com. Encourage people to go check that out. About how it's just time to finish, etc. We did not see a team that looked willing to finish in Indianapolis. We've talked about how they're kind of a team that needs, I don't want to say a motivation, but they certainly play better when their backs are against the wall. It's a weird sort of, you know, dichotomy they have going on. But last home game of the regular season. So this is your last chance to do it at home in front of your crowd, a couple of days before Christmas. You got a weak team coming in, you know. Is that enough? I mean, you know what I mean? Is that enough to get up for, I guess, is the question.
You know what? I think you have to really play with some desperation. And you know, we thought desperation is when they were 3-5. And when they hit that wall when they played the Tennessee Titans. And now, you don't win this game, RJ. Think about all the doubt, and everything's going to just blow up. I mean, they're going to revert back to the negativity that was surrounding this team when they 8 weeks ago or 9 weeks ago.
If they lose, next week will be
the hell's gonna break
of all time. Next week will be terrible if they lose.
Exactly. So I think you just got to go in, and that's got to be the motivation, is that we don't want to go there.
Yeah.
We have a team that's coming in here. We should win. They're 1-6. So let's not give them an opportunity to think that they're even going to be in the game. And that's got to be the mindset. The fear of having to go to New York and win on the road and clinch there. I mean, you're not going to get any – you can't worry about what other teams are going to do for you. Mm-hmm. I mean, we've seen that theory before. And I will say this. If you got to worry about mathematically someone else helping you out, are you that good anyway?
I agree. And you're playing to a degree for a bye because the Bears are probably going to beat the 49ers on Sunday, which would mean that the Cowboys cannot – get the 3 seed. They would be stuck at the 4 seed, which would mean that they would have nothing to play for next week, which would mean they could let guys rest. They certainly have enough that are worthy consideration for that. So you're playing effectively for a bye next week to get ready for the wild card round. Last thing before we make our predictions, I mentioned that we just recently had the 10-year anniversary of the final game at Texas Stadium. A, because I did not know this, were you at the post game ceremony at the after the Cowboys lost to the Ravens when they had everybody come out at Texas Stadium?
Yeah, I was. That was a year. I think that was they had 2 rushing touchdowns.
Oh,
and that was awful. That was hard to endure. You had to bring that up. Now I just got sick to my stomach.
Well, what's your favorite Texas Stadium memory?
Oh, gosh, there's a lot of them, fortunately for me. I think when we beat the 49ers, the NFC Championship game.
3-inch letters.
Yes, that was that game that that Jimmy Johnson boldly predicted, and we backed it up. And I guess I have to go back to the Thanksgiving, the ice game with the Leon Lett game.
Nice.
That was crazy. But you know what? It just had so much mystique to it and so much history to it. And the picture that you sent out, it looked really contemporary, too. It almost looked like AT&T Stadium, the modern version, and just the way it was taken and the lighting. But, you know, I'd be lying to you. Every time I drive by there, I mean, it's kind of an emotional thing to think that all it is like a graveyard of it's all this rubble and everything, and it's a infrastructure for all these, you know, new highways and everything. But I just remember when they imploded the stadium, and I was out of town, and I was flying out of Love Field, which is right there on 183, that freeway and 114, and I'd go by there and I'm like, man, it just seems really eerie. Mm-hmm. There's nothing there.
Yeah.
But there were so many great games, but it's just remarkable when you see something like that. It just brings back really good memories, and I think it's even more remarkable It's been 10 years since the Cowboys have played there.
It is. I mean, it's amazing to think they've been at AT&T Stadium for 10 years. You know, that stadium. I mean, obviously, I mean, you've been there a thousand
it's
times.
It's time to win something in that stadium.
It's time. I mean, it's been long enough. Okay. Well, speaking of win something, they have won a couple of division titles there.
Oh yeah.
You know,
yeah,
in 10 years, but
well, you know, the bigger prize, the
sure.
NFC Championship. That's
sure.
what I'm referring
but,
to.
But they do have a chance to at least win another NFC East title on Sunday. Your prediction, Tony, do the Cowboys win the NFC East on Sunday against Tampa Bay?
You know, I think they will. And I think there's a couple of the keys to this game. I think one is to eliminate all those negative plays they had last week, the penalties, being able to execute. I mean, the miscues, the drop passes. I think that's the key going in this game. And I think I always say this. You say you got to start fast. You have a team, as we just mentioned many times to this our show, is that they that you know have the propensity to shut down. And you know Tampa Bay, you know, you have a team like this. And we always say this. I mean, you give them a chance to say, look, it's going to be a long day. And I think, you know, third is the matchups, you know, the offensive line, the Cowboys, Jason Pierre-Paul, I mean, he can still bring 11 and a half sacks. But I think that this is a game where the offensive line is really, really has got to mesh together and have a better showing than last game.
I agree.
And, you know, that's going to be a key in this game. And the deficiency. And I think the last hit too, but it seems like there's perpetuates with all these different keys. I really think Dak is. They have got to be able to create some confidence in going in the last game. And I mentioned that when I wrote that blog. It's you cannot go on in the playoff. You're going to play in the playoffs with doubt. So this is a game that really sets up for that, RJ. And I think those keys again. They got to eliminate the mistakes. They cannot be these self-inflicting plays. Especially against a team like Tampa Bay that wants you to give them an excuse to just shut down.
I agree. I know you said that it's going to be a long day. I usually don't enjoy noon games, but I'm kind of glad this one's at noon because there is like a butterfly effect to this game, and I think it is kind of good to kind of get it out of your system early instead of waiting all day because sometimes that can be really harboring. I think the Cowboys win as well. I think that they're really good at that for whatever reason. I mean, you know, they used to talk all the time about how Dak Prescott was a terrible practice quarterback, for example, and he was really great in games talking about his rookie season. And, you know, you hear that moniker a lot that the guy's a gamer. And I think the Cowboys as a team are gamers. You know, they don't do well when they've got,
you know, but I never, you know, RJ, I mean, I just don't ever buy into that. You're a bad practice player, but you're a gamer.
Oh, it's weird.
And, you know, those are the things you execute. And again, I'm not trying to pile on to Dak Prescott, be part of that party. But, I mean, look at some of the throws that he's missed. And another, I just thought of another key. All those points that they've left on the table, you know, we saw last week. I mean, those are the throws he's got to be able to make. Those would-be touchdown passes. And again, this – you know, the defense can carry this team. We've seen that happen, but you have to have to really for the Cowboys to be able to clinch this. You know, on Sunday, they have got to be able to be more efficient. And those points that they've left on the table all year long, those are the ones they have to make.
I agree. I mean, I just think that for whatever reason, I think it clicks for them. I really do think it clicks. I'll get your bold prediction right now, but mine is. I think they are going to be just – I think they're going to overcorrect when it comes to the red zone. I think they're going to say, okay, you guys want some red zone offense? We're going to give you some red zone offense, you know. It's kind of like, you know, you're at the Christmas table eating whatever you got for dinner. You say, I'm really hungry. They say, okay, Tony, really hungry? All right. You know, Sawaski, you know what, bro? And they just pile on your plate. I think Zeke does
I'll
something –
I'll say I'm always hungry, bro.
Yeah. I think Zeke does something he never has before. Three rushing touchdowns, because I think matter of circumstance, maybe Amari gets tackled at the two, you know, sometimes that has to work out that way, and I think Zeke gets in three times.
Wow, that is a bold prediction considering how I was going to just give you the over and under, or maybe a percentage of the red zone, because That's a really good bold prediction.
Well, let's do that then. If you want to go that as a bold prediction, they convert touchdowns on what percent of red zone possessions?
Oh, gosh. Well, hopefully they get in the red zone a lot. I think they may do that because, hey, the Cowboys are good at that. They're good at getting in the red zone. They just can't score. You know, I'll throw a percentage out to you. Let's go 50%.
Okay, I like it.
That would be pretty bold.
That would these days. That is living on the edge.
Unfortunately, yeah. In the red zone, I think that's another thing. We got to go back. Maybe next week we'll, you know, when we do our next show, is that you need to go back and like historically, or just this year in the National Football League, see what teams are averaging inside the red zone. But obviously, the Cowboys are bad. They're 31st in the league. So I'm gonna throw that. I guess that bold prediction will be 50% scoring in the red zone.
I dig it. All right, cool. Well, Tony, a very Merry Christmas to you and yours. And to all of you listening, a very Merry Christmas. Again, if you are traveling, be safe. Safe travels and good times to you. Enjoy the game on Sunday. Tony and I will be back on Christmas Eve to wrap up the hopeful division champion Dallas Cowboys win over the Buccaneers. But, you know, hey, things could get wild. We'll see.
Hey, you know what I was thinking? And Feliz Navidad to you and your family. I was thinking, I wonder if I can get some good tamales in Clearwater, Florida.
I would bet no.
Man, I got to have tamales on Christmas Eve, right?
You know, there's still a couple days I could, you know, FedEx you some overnight, something like that.
Oh, hey.
You know, get some dry ice, figure it out. But I'm going to bet that Florida is
there's
not.
Gotta be some good, there's got to be some tamales down here somewhere.
Google it. I'm sure you can find
it. I'm sure. Go to the Kroger. Well, all right. No, I don't think I'm going to go to the Kroger.
All right, Tony. Thanks, everyone, for listening. Have a very Merry Christmas. We'll see you next week. Go Cowboys. This was the 750.
Hello, I'm Ashley Carmen.
I'm Caitlin Tiffany.
We're the hosts of Why'd You Push That Button, The Verge's show about all the choices technology forces us to make.
We're back for season 3, talking about questions like, why do you delete your tweets?
And why do you type in lowercase letters that make you seem like a serial killer?
And why are you on an exclusive dating app?
You're not that special. We're releasing a new episode every Wednesday, and you can find us anywhere you typically find podcasts, which is Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Pocket Casts. So go ahead and subscribe and check us out.